Force on ONC Counties. I want to thank everyone for being here today. We'll be getting an update on the financial health of Curry, Lane, Josephine counties after the ballot measures. Co-Chair Hannah, do you have any comments, opening comments?
I would say good for Lane County. That's a nice thing. Still some problems around the state, and let's not forget the real fix is federal forest legislation that gives a sustained yield harvest, which has the jobs and the money in our local communities.
Thank you.
Agreed. Okay, I'm going to open an informational meeting, an update on the financial health of Curry, Lane, Josephine counties after the May 21st ballot. The first panel, I'd like to call up Mike MacArthur, the director of the Association of Oregon Counties, to just give us an overview.
Good morning, Chair Hoyle, Chair Hannah, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. So we have some results, as you've heard. I'll take you back to the gospel according to Tim Nesbitt, and it requires that three things happen, that counties step up and take action on low tax rates, and the people locally need to do something. It suggests that the state needs to do some things to help here. And then it suggests that the federal government needs to change the regime by which we manage federal forests. So we had progress on two of those fronts with the Lane County measure passing and with Senator Wyden announcing a framework for an ONC plan. So interesting results there. We're hoping for some results from this body as we go forward. I think if you look at those election results in the three counties, and you'll hear from the commissioners about that and their opinions about that later, which is much closer to the ground than I am, I think that there's an object lesson here to be learned from Lane's success and how they did that. I have listened to the consultants report that was done by Lane County and the careful public opinion testing done there and the approach that they took in A, selecting funding mechanisms that were countywide, jail and juvenile. Those are things that affect all the citizens. I think the fact that rural patrol gets involved in some of these levies is a negative. And I think that the narrowness of Lane's approach as opposed to the other two helped them. Also, I think they carefully gauged at what level people could afford or were willing to pay for additional public safety. Obviously, that isn't going to solve their problem long term, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think maybe incrementally approaching this problem is the way it has to be done. I recall back in the days when I first started in county government, we had the levy system. And frequently, we would propose a levy that would balance our budget and be turned down by the voters the first time. I mean, this happens, used to happen with school board budgets as well. And so you come back, you retool, and you go back and ask the folks again. We've changed it. We've listened to you. What do you say? The first time we tried this when I was elected, it took three times. And I don't think that was an uncommon experience. So hopefully the counties can retool their measures and go back. Now, at the state level, I think there's some other things that are important to not lose sight of. And the report that I cite here talks about those things that the state should do. And this is generally, not just for the ONC counties, but we used to have the state contributing to the A&T fund, CAFA fund, about $5 million a biennium to help pay for the cost of collecting taxes, property taxes for schools. That's no longer the case. The report says restore that. The state used to pay for the cost of deputy district attorneys, no longer. The report says you should pay for that. We should be able to get some help with court facilities. 3126 begins that process. Elections, totally, except for special districts, totally a responsibility of the county. We just asked for PCP. They take the precinct committee people out of that process. Expensive and unnecessary. You could help us with that. So there are things the state still could do. They have to be general, not just ONC, but I hope you'll consider those recommendations that are still alive today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone on the panel have questions? No? Okay, thank you very much. Hold on. First, we're going to call up our panel from Josephine County, as we have Representative Hicks here. And so Simone Hare, Chair of Josephine County Commission, Cheryl Walker, Josephine County Commissioner, and Representative Wally Hicks. Representative, would you like to start?
Thank you. I am Representative Wally Hicks, Josephine County, and I am here to testify as to the current status of things in Josephine County and present some possible options for the legislature in its remaining weeks to act. And what I want to do is start with an article that ran on National Public Radio's All Things Considered on May 22nd, 2013, so last week, that outlines pretty efficiently the condition of Southern Oregon and Josephine County in particular. So we'll see if our audio is going to cooperate with us. And here we go. All right. Okay, let's... Sorry. We had our tech guy in here, and I think he departed the scene just prior to. But let's get a run at it.
I'm going to go too.
Yeah.
So it's running. He said to plug the white one into this.
Many counties in the state. Safety budgets due to the loss of vital timber payments. That's money from the federal government paid to counties with large... Imagine dialing 911 and the voice on the other end says, sorry, due to budget cuts,
if you have some other tests, other things that you want to highlight.
I do. So, all right. So where to go from here? And I do point the or direct my attention first to House Bill 3453, a committee currently pending down in House Rules, and it is scheduled for a hearing or is going to be scheduled for a hearing on Monday of next week. The bill, after having spoken with legislative counsel, does have some fundamental flaws that would need to be repaired or changed before, if the body were to decide to go forward before doing so. And so I do propose that if you decide to go forward on this bill, you do at least what I'm about to explain first. So Section 2 of the bill reads that if the governor, the president, and minority leader of the Senate, and speaker and minority leader of the House of Representatives agree unanimously that a public safety fiscal emergency has occurred or is imminent, the governor may proclaim a public safety fiscal emergency. I do personally have my doubts as to the constitutional permissibility of that. I think that legislative counsel would probably come down in that direction as well. And so what I would ultimately propose is that the legislature simply pass a bill that permits the governor under certain enumerated circumstances to declare a public safety emergency, a public safety fiscal emergency, and act accordingly. I think that would be far more in line probably with the constitutional provisions. There was, by the way, Article 10 of the Constitution, which was recently passed by ballot referral, that does provide for catastrophic disasters and gubernatorial authority in such an event. But having reviewed that, I don't think that this would necessarily fall under that type of authority, with the exception of perhaps a public health emergency. Of course, this is such a brand new provision of the Constitution, Article 10, which is, again, the governor's public safety emergency powers, that I don't think that action along these lines would probably be allowed. But, of course, there are no court cases to go there anyway. So I do propose a change into the mechanism by which a public safety emergency is declared. And so I would submit that to the committee for its consideration. Okay, now more to the point of how such services would be.
Wally.
Yes.
Excuse me. Representative Hicks.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Help us understand the actual difference between the two proposals. So the one is you're saying make it only the governor versus using other decision makers.
In essence, I'd say that.
Okay. And the idea was during the development, expanding the number of decision makers in order to get a broader base of support. And so why move away from that?
I think the Constitution doesn't permit I suspect, and I'm no constitutional scholar, but where I'm coming out of the LC meeting, I'm thinking that the Constitution wouldn't permit four legislators from limiting the governor's power subsequent to an act of this body. I don't think we can do that.
Okay.
Mr. Co-Chair, I think we probably, thank you
okay.
for including that catch in there, but it probably wouldn't have any teeth.
Yeah. I hope you're wrong about it, because we spent a fair amount of time working on how do you expand so that you get a number of people included in the decision-making process, and I thought we were past that, but now that you've brought it up again, I'm certain those who are listening and LC and everybody else is going to be racing around trying to figure out whether we can or can't, but I appreciate your input, and we'll go back and revisit that.
Thanks. Yeah.
Vet it carefully.
And of course, I mean, and I would also submit, and I appreciate the amendments I think that you have offered and other members have discussed, that the county level government officials ought to be involved, and local level government officials ought to be a part of this decision-making process, too.
I know you have more to testify, and they are in the amended versions.
In the amended, so, I think the dash four, and so I...
Yeah, and I... And technically, I think now it's going to be a dash six because of some tax provision that was, I don't know, Representative Hoyle, you've seen this as well. LC came back to us and said because there was a tax provision and it had an emergency clause, it can't. So now instead of being the dash four, it's going to be the dash six. But the provisions are the same. It just can't have an emergency clause.
Okay, on that point, correct. So a tax provision can't have an emergency clause. There has to be a 91-day period for a subsequent referral. But I don't think we can actually include that in the bill. I think that's where we run into another constitutional issue. I think, and again, we need legislative council vetting on this thing, but yeah. I talked to them yesterday, and so I think we can't go in that direction. I think we're going to have some issues of territorial uniformity in regards to imposing an income tax, either whether it stems from this body or from gubernatorial action on just one county. It's got to be uniform throughout the area of authority, if you will. It's got to be a statewide income tax is what I'm saying. I don't think we can just tax one county. The county commission may, if the charter permits, impose an income tax. I don't think our charter permits it in this case. And so, frankly, that option is off the table. But that doesn't mean we have no options. So that's the direction I'm going to go next, with permission of the co-chairs. Okay, so here we go. Section 7, as to the funding piece of this. Alternately, rather than the tax on personal income and corporate income, and I think our good commissioner is going to discuss the situation there more, but I would propose the following. So House Bill 3456, which was proposed by Commissioner Walker and also Commissioner Hare, particularly, is pending currently, or it was pending in a committee when, or it's pending currently actually in the Revenue Committee, and it essentially proposes that 2% of special district revenues be returned to the county for its administrative overhead. What I'm talking about is school districts, community college districts, there's a jail bond that has a district. Anyway, the county does the assessment and the collection and the administration and all these taxes that it's picking up for the special districts that are within its jurisdiction, and yet it gets no offset for the expenses that it lays out to do so. And so 3456, again, pending down in rules, would allow for a 2% of, would allow the county essentially to recover 2% of the amount that the special districts raise, which in the case of Josephine County would be on a scale of about $1 to $1.3 million, I think.
Yes.
That's about $65 million.
Representative Hicks, we have
yes.
One question.
So we had a little talk, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, we had a little talk about the state coming in and doing some of those services and charging for it, so we've had a little discussion around that. Would the bill you're talking about allow all counties to do it, or just counties that were established as a distressed or an emergency county?
Thank you, co-chairs, Representative Freedom. So this would be triggered upon declaration of public fiscal emergency. So just this would be the governor's authority, just for the counties that were declared.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think that we are. We've got the technical assistance for you to be able to play your audio. And then I also just want to redirect you a bit in that we're focused on updating the financial health of the Curry Lane, Josephine counties after the ballot measure. And I know that you're going into some details about options that we may have, which I appreciate, and we can deal with some of these issues offline and potentially at our next committee hearing. But one of the things I would say is let's connect it back to what's the status, the sort of the financial health of your county post election.
Okay. And even that said, with your permission, may I do two more sentences on options?
Sure,
and
absolutely.
When we're ready to go on this. Go ahead. Oh, should be audio right now, but it's not playing. Okay, so a couple more sentences and options as to Section 7. I would also propose, and I think this would probably be permissible, that we basically take the amount of lottery revenue that is generated within a county's borders and return to that county the ratio, the portion that would have otherwise gone to economic development, and essentially direct the county to use that on economic development activities, or law enforcement activities that would enhance economic development. There is a longstanding attorney general's opinion that basically says you can build a prison with economic development dollars, lottery dollars. And so if you can build a prison, then I would argue you can run a jail, and the economy would therefore benefit from it. So that would get us another good way along the road toward financial assistance of the counties without having to impose an income tax type of option. And so, and I'll stop there. There will be a hearing again on Monday, and we can vet more ideas then. And he left. So I don't know what we do now.
So, well, what we can do is now we can hear from Commissioner Walker, and then we'll, if you stay there, then we can come back. And because I have heard that audio, and it's pretty compelling. Commissioner.
Good morning, Co-Chair Hoyle. And is this on? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. In front of you is what's called our Josephine County Budget and Brief Handbook, the proposed budget. As of yesterday, this was now passed by the Budget Committee, and I'd like to direct your attention to the center part of this folder. This will give, I'm sorry, Cheryl Walker, Josephine County Commissioner. If you will look over on the far right column, 2011-12, the adopted budget, you'll see down there the total budget, $93,703,400. That was what we were 3 years ago. And if you will look again at this one as well, this gives you the FTEs. From, you will see that from the end of the ONC funding that we had, mostly the secure rural schools, we have been continuing to decline in our budget as far as being able to have employees to carry out county services. You will also note that at the bottom, we pretty much kept our criminal justice system whole. The red bars across there, the general public safety, we kept those employees right around 200, varying year to year, but around 200, which was relatively adequate. It was not ideal, but at least we were able to keep to function and to do fairly well. We also kept the sheriff's department, the sheriff only, right around 100 employees, which also was relatively functional, though not perfectly ideal. But you will notice that this current year, 2012-13, the one that we're currently in, is where we had to take the major hit in the sheriff's department. The projected FTEs for the coming year of 279 for the entire county is what is approved, what we approved last night. Although that is going to be, probably result in a further reduction of about 15 more employees in the Josephine County Sheriff's Department. The current budget that we have approved at around $67 million certainly is not adequate to provide the law enforcement or public safety services we need. We will have one deputy patrol officer. The backup for that deputy will be our sheriff himself. We have three contract deputies, one in Cave Junction that the city of Cave Junction pays for. We have one that is the patrol officer on the river, which is paid for by the state. And then we have another one that is a forestry patrol. So those three that are all contract officers paid from outside sources, we will continue to have as long as we can have the contract. If we had not last night transferred, or yesterday at the Budget Committee, transferred approximately almost $300,000 into the Sheriff's Department, we would have experienced further cuts to only 60 beds in our jail. Currently, we're at 99. Of those 60 beds, 30 of those beds are contracted to the federal authorities for detention of federal prisoners in transit. We added that additional money last night out of our reserve funds, which takes our reserve funds to $2.9 million. We would...
Commissioner, hold on one moment. I think we're having some technical difficulties. Could we... stand at ease for a moment? Whichever you prefer, if you'd like to continue, or let's get this moving, yes.
Okay, here's our All Things Considered article that ran on May 22nd.
Imagine dialing 911, and the voice on the other end says, "Sorry, due to budget cuts, no one can help you." Well, that's the reality for tens of thousands of people in rural Oregon. Many counties in the state have cut public safety budgets due to the loss of vital timber payments. That's money from the federal government paid to counties with large national forests. In other words, land that can't be taxed. The bill authorizing those payments has expired, and Amelia Templeton of Oregon Public Broadcasting has the story of one county now struggling to survive without them.
Josephine County, in the southwest corner of Oregon, was probably the hardest hit. The Sheriff's Department lost more than half of its funding. As a result, deputies no longer respond to emergency calls in the evenings or on the weekends. Calls like this one, made just last August.
911 emergency. My ex-boyfriend is trying to break into my house. I'm not letting him in, but he's, like, tried to break down the door, and he's trying to break into one of the windows.
The threat she was reporting was real. Her ex was wanted by the state police for parole violations. We're not using the woman's name, because it's NPR's policy not to name the victims of sexual assault. She told dispatch her ex had hurt her before.
He put me in the hospital a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to keep him away.
The call came in on a Saturday at 4:58 in the morning. None of the sheriff's deputies in Josephine County were on duty, so dispatch transferred the call to the Oregon State Police. But they also didn't have anyone available.
I don't have anybody to send out there.
Okay.
You know, obviously, if he comes inside the residence and assaults you, can you ask him to go away, or do you know if he's intoxicated or anything?
I've already asked him. I've already told him I was calling you.
The dispatcher stays on the phone with the woman for 10 minutes and 21 seconds. She tells the caller to try to hide in the house.
Is he still there?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And four times in total, she says there isn't anyone who can help.
Once again, it's unfortunate you guys don't have any law enforcement up there.
According to police records, a few minutes later, the woman's ex-boyfriend, Michael Bella, used a piece of metal to pry open her front door. He then attacked her. Eventually, state police arrested him, and he pleaded guilty to sexual assault and sodomy, among other charges.
There isn't a day go by that we don't have another victim.
That's Josephine County Sheriff Gil Gilbertson. He didn't want to comment on this particular case, but after the budget cuts went into effect, he sent out a press release. In it, he warned victims of domestic violence to, quote, consider relocating to an area with adequate law enforcement services.
There's absolutely no consequences to committing a crime today, given the fact that law enforcement is as weak as it is.
The whole system has crumbled, and we're the only ones left, and we don't have the badge, and we don't have the gun.
Chris Millette provides counseling and social services to victims of domestic violence and rape in Josephine County. Millette says she's seen women give up on trying to get help from law enforcement and choose instead to stay with their abusers.
Because they're more likely to get killed if they leave. And when they know that there's not going to be a police response, they're a lot less likely to take those steps.
For years, Millette says, federal timber payments funded good public safety in this county. They also kept local tax rates low. Now, she says, it's time for Josephine County residents to start paying for their community's safety. A tax increase to fund public safety is before Josephine County voters in a special election today. For NPR News, I'm Amelia Templeton in Medford, Oregon.
I don't think there could be a more vivid example of what the long-term effect is of not having jobs or secure school funds coming into your county. So thank you. Commissioner Walker, would you like to continue?
Yes. I would like to just finish with the statements here on the budget. On the back, it explains the items that we do provide in Josephine County by category to go with the information here, and I'm not going to dwell on that because you have the information here yourself, but I just want to draw your attention to the reduction in the budget just in the last couple of years, and those cuts finally had to come out of our law enforcement because we had been cutting, as demonstrated by the chart on the FTEs, we'd been cutting in every other system and department in Josephine County. The public safety levy that was on this last week on May the 21st was the second one in a row. Last year we had one that was for criminal justice. That was the category on the ballot to provide services to criminal justice. It was $1.99 per thousand. That one failed. The spread between the yes and no votes was 16 points. The people who supported that redoubled their efforts. They formed a group called Securing Our Safety, which was a citizens-driven group. People from all walks of life, many of them victims over this last couple of years. They put this idea forward that they wanted a district, and they brought it to the Board of County Commissioners. Due to the time frame as a board, we voted to pass it on to a second hearing, but after discussing with the community, we didn't feel that they were ready for a law enforcement district, and we didn't think that the $1.99 would be enough for a district, and we didn't want to pass a district that was going to be inadequate. So we fell back on the levy process, and we went with $1.48. The $1.48 was not a random number that we picked out of the air. We took nine different functions or programs of the county government that would actually make the wheel of justice roll. Of course, somewhat slowly, but it would. We could at least arrest these offenders. We could at least take them to jail, hold them to trial. And if they were sentenced, we could actually hold them. We also had sanctions by the courts. So in doing that, we put the $1.48 on. I will give you the categories that we had on there. We had the jail. We had what we call patrol response, because it seemed to be the concern that people had was not so much patrol, because when you have a very large rural county, you can't patrol every street. They wanted someone to respond, just like the call you heard. If someone calls in, they want someone to be able to show up. We had the district attorney's office, juvenile justice. To me, that was one of the biggest tragedies. We have a relatively new juvenile justice center down there where we can hold juvenile offenders as well as runaways. We had to close that center entirely. We rent three beds from Jackson County currently. This would have provided civil service for the courts. School security. School security is something we've never had, but we understand that there was going to be federal grant funds available to provide officers to provide school security. We wanted to have money available because we understand that would be a matching grant process. We also had animal control, and some people thought that was a rather strange thing to have in law enforcement, but the issues we have had is when officers go in on warrants, oftentimes there's pit bulls or some other kind of dog that's in there that has been told to guard the property, and we need to have an officer that can go in. We've also had several incidences of animal cruelty and hoarding. I think the most famous was the almost 200 miniature horses that were confiscated that we had to actually call in enforcement officers at that situation. Fortunately, we were able to get a grant from the National Animal Protection League to pay for that deputy, which was $5,000, money we did not have. We've also had an increase in incidences of rabies in animals out in the Illinois Valley. So we thought that this was an important part of the law enforcement to keep our officers safe, as well as providing a certain measure of safety in the community against some of these issues that were going on. So to overcome the objection last year that there was no specificity in the designation criminal justice, we tried to spell it out this time as far as the departments. But it didn't overcome it. We did reduce the spread between yes and no to just 2 points, which is huge progress. We had just under 13,000 people vote yes, and a little over 13,000 voted no. So it was very close, and we're very encouraged by that, but it still doesn't provide us any relief for the next year. I would also like to say that when it comes to people voting no on this measure, we have to remember Josephine County is not a county with a lot of resources, and I know it's very easy for, and even some people in my own county, to say that, well, people just need to step up to the plate and pay for the services. But I'd like to say that in our county, our population is just under 83,000. 23% of those people are over the age of 65. Many of them are on just Social Security income, so they pay very little taxes and they have very little money. And when you talk about raising their property taxes, that extra $200 to $300 a year might just be what puts them over. That might be, you know, half of one of their monthly checks. So that's a difficult part. 19% of our entire county population is below the poverty level. One-third of all of our children live in poverty. $37,800 is the median household income. That's $12,000 less than the state median household income. And we currently have 11.1% unemployment. So when you're looking at the demographics of who can afford to pay, I can see why people would come down to the question, can I afford this or not? And I think many of the people who voted no was simply they could not afford it. So even though there are those of us that would like to have seen it pass and worked very hard, and like I said, nearly 13,000 of our citizens worked very hard and did vote for it, we have to take into consideration the demographics and the financial status of our county. Many of our jobs, because of the loss of the timber industry, most of them are service jobs, most of them are minimum wage, $8.75. If you have two family members, a mother and a father, both working at minimum wage, they're barely going to be above the poverty level in the county, and they may have two children, thus one-third of the children living in poverty. So looking at the economic status, we cannot, and in my view, be critical of those who said no. They said no for a reason. Granted, we have some of those who say no on anything, and there will always be those. But I think it's important for us to remember that we're trying to create solutions. We have to find ways that the state can help us to help ourselves. I know that House Bill 3453 is one of the solutions that's put out there. One of the provisions in there was the income tax provision to pay for it. I agree with my good representative, Mr. Hicks, here, that an income tax may indeed not be constitutional. And I know as I read the bill, it may come down to the governor trying to have the county commissioners impose whatever funding stream would be determined. And I don't think that that would be one that would be very widely spread in our county, because when you see the spread in the income of the individuals in there, I just gave you the demographics. I think that when I looked up the statistics on the income tax coming out of Josephine County, they collect about $60 million. So when you collect $60 million of income tax out of a county, much of that comes from perhaps individuals that have income outside the area, investment income, because certainly they're not a lot of wage earners that make very much money, and they may well be businesses. So you're going to have a very small sector of people that pay that $60 million that will actually be paying a surcharge. We also have a little over, I think it's 25,800 property owners in our county. 17 to 18% of those property owners in our county don't even live in the county. So if you're assessing an income tax, 17 to 18% of those people will not be paying for the benefit provided. So also, I understand that whatever the state would come in to provide, it may be a situation like a loan where we would either have to pay it or pay it back. So that, you know, with no, if it's an 18-month scheme type of thing, at the end of 18 months, we would still have no way to pay for it. So I would like to, as far as these bills that Representative Hicks has talked about, those would provide us an opportunity, perhaps, to help ourselves more, because I know that the citizens at the Securing Our Safety are talking about coming forward with another program. Yes, Representative Hicks.
Commissioner, tell me where you're coming up with the loan provision, because we've never seen that.
No, I just, when I read it, I said that it might be. I didn't say it would be. If it is a loan, I'm just saying if it is a loan provision,
okay,
it might be.
3453 has no loan provision,
right,
in it, and I don't.
I don't want an amendment to go there. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
We don't want to propagate that. Somebody wrote that, and
okay. No.
We haven't had that discussion at this level, and I want to make sure that.
Thank you.
We don't say that. I mean, from our perspective, there's no loan provision in this. I mean,
thank you.
The one thing about it is, while it is very difficult and while it may come down to county commissioners who are the elected officials,
right,
put on the hot seat to a degree. It also has the state paying for half the public safety on a temporary basis.
Right. Thank you.
The 18 months. So I just want to be careful about adding
to something. I didn't want to represent that was in there. Yeah. That is some of the discussion that has come to me and some of the emails and people's concern. And I just want to address that we don't want that to happen. Okay. Another thing I would like to put forth in regards to House Bill 3456 that Representative Hicks discussed. I had our county assessor provide the information on that particular bill. It provides a graded step process as far as implementation so that it would have a minimal effect on the districts. Currently, Josephine County collects around $60 million, of which only $3.8 million is kept by the county. All the rest of it is for other jurisdictions, mostly districts. So we're providing the software, the hardware, the staff, tracking, all of that for collecting all of that other money for other sources. The first year, and if this were in effect, because we have also the 3% increase in property assessment, Josephine County would appreciate $265,842 under that bill. By the time the full 4 years of implementation, we would realize over $1 million. That $1 million going to the assessor, which, by the way, the bill has a 2% cap. Our county right now, it's 1.8 cost for collection. That money would go to the assessor's office, and the money that we're currently providing from our general fund could be kept for other purposes in our county. It could provide additional jail beds. It could provide additional patrol officers. It could provide a juvenile department. So we would like to see something like that happen, which is one of the types of things where we could help ourselves rather than the state having to help us. Another issue, and I know this was mentioned a little earlier in regards to the district attorneys, we provide and house the district attorneys in our courthouse in Josephine County, as well as another juvenile court that we built separately. And I have a statement here from our district attorney in regards to his office. And prior to the deep cuts taken in 2012-13, which is the current year, the district attorney office was staffed with 9 deputy DAs with a corresponding support staff. That was where he was able to prosecute the crimes that came before him. It says, with the loss of 4 of the 9 deputy DAs and 4 legal secretaries and the receptionist in July 2012, the district attorney was forced to drastically reduce prosecution of new cases. Almost no misdemeanors were filed, including most DUIs and domestic assaults. Felony drug cases, except for those with a presumptive prison sentence, were dropped for the most part, as were Class C felony property crimes that did not reach the high level of loss, such as burglary 2 and theft 1. Our office was closed to the public all but a few hours of the day. In September 2012, we received the Secure Rural Schools money of about $4.4 million. And so when they received that money, the board determined to save most of the money for this current year, which we have done. We gave about $500,000 to the sheriff last year for the jail. This year, we are using the balance of that money, about $3.8 million for the sheriff's department. That's how we're able to continue to operate it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to. A small amount of that money was designated to the district attorney. The district attorney was able to rehire 1.5 deputy DAs and a half-time receptionist. This allowed us to increase our filing of felony property crimes and to file some but not all of the drug possession cases. We were able to file most DUIs and some of the most serious misdemeanor assaults. We were able to open to the office 5 hours a day. With the current budget, they will not be able to retain that. I know that currently a lot of the officers in town that stop individuals on some of the crimes, they actually just cite them and release because they know that they will not be prosecuted. So there are a lot of misdemeanors that are not being prosecuted. So that summarizes my presentation in regards to where we are, where we were, and where we are. And briefly, where we would like to go as far as bills from the state, from this body that would be able to help us help ourselves. I do know that the Securing Our Safety organization, the citizen group, is planning on putting forth another measure. We can't, the double majority would be required in the fall. There is a grants pass public safety levy, which is police and fire on the ballot in November. They do not want to compete with that, so they're hoping to be able to put something on until May next year. May next year is a long ways off, and we will not have money from that until the following year, of course, in the tax season, so when the tax billing comes in. So any questions?
Any questions or comments,
I have one. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, Commissioner, what would the – you listed the public safety items that you had as part of the tax rate. And tell me the number again, a dollar –
$1.48 per thousand assessed value, correct.
What would the amount have been to those public safety items had that passed? Because your total budget in the prior biennium was like just over $23 million. Mm-hmm. The proposed is 12.7. What would have that added back to public safety?
In the first year of the levy, it would have produced about $9.1 million. And that would have provided... That would have provided about 140 jail beds. Currently we're at 99, and we will continue at the 99 because we did take some money out of reserves to continue at that, actually at 100. And so the 9.1 was for those categories. About one-third of it would have been for the jail, about one-third for the sheriff response, and then small percentages for some of the others.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hall. Just one clarification. Could you please one more time go over the statistics for what your population is that's over 65?
23% is over age 65.
3%. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. You're welcome.
Representative McClain.
Thank you. You mentioned, Commissioner, that the unemployment rate is 11.1%. That's the most current figure?
Yes. I believe those numbers came out about a week or so ago.
And that does not factor in, I assume, the closure of the rough and ready mill?
It probably does not.
And just to state the obvious, it's going to get worse.
Yes.
Well,
yes, it will.
Moved by your testimony as well as my colleagues, Representative Hicks. I wish, in a way, as much as this legislature often debates curriculum, and we study the consequence of actions going on in foreign countries with regards to everything from the environment to culture, I would love to make it mandatory that both of you in your presentation today would be heard in every school in our state so that everyone would understand the impact that's happening right in our own backyard of failed policies at the federal level and apathy at the state.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'd just like to say that even though I've reported to you where we were and where we are currently, I'm in charge as part of my role as County Commissioner of Economic Development. I recently went out, and of course I always visit with our local business people, and I have visited with one gentleman that has a business there that has about 50 employees. They had an operation in China that they're going to be relocating back here to the States. He said he's going to be leaving Josephine County when the lease is up on his building. That disturbs me. I don't know how many others are thinking that. But he's not doing it because of the location of his business or the status of his business. He's doing it for the safety, what he says is the safety of his employees and his family. And that disturbs me when it comes to economic development, because now that we've made the national news and everyone talks about, how it's not safe, we don't want to be losing our economic opportunities there, because we've worked very hard to develop e-commerce. We're doing very well in developing e-commerce. That's a bright light in Josephine County. I'd like to say, too, that out in Illinois Valley, where we lost the timber jobs recently, approximately 60 of those jobs that have been already lost, the final ones, I think, closed down the end of this month. Taylor Sausage, who is a meat packing company out there that makes various kinds of specialty meats and sausages, been in business many, many years. They recently were able to hire an additional meat inspector, and that was a challenge because the federal Department of Agriculture did not want to put another meat inspector there. They had one, which, by the way, the meat packer pays for. The government doesn't pay for it. But they kept denying an additional meat packer until the gentleman who owns it, Terry Taylor, got a hold of his congressional delegation as well as Representative Hicks and the Board of County Commissioners, and we all got on top of that, and within about 10 days, we got a phone call from one of our legislators that said, well, we finally got a meat inspector for you. So they are now operating two shifts, and they said by the end of summer they'll be hiring somewhere between 20, 25 more employees by the end of this summer. So we do have some good things going on there, and we are working very diligently to continue to do that because we are a county, even though we're very have a lot of very independent-minded people, we also have some very determined and very entrepreneurial people, some very committed people to the community, and we're trying to continue as a Board of County Commissioners to provide those opportunities for economic development to increase the number of jobs there. And the public safety thing, we look at it right now as a temporary bump in the road. We're working very hard to solve that problem. And the timber, as Representative Hammer said, is one of those that we work on also. We know it's a piece of the puzzle, a very important part of our community. And we're sitting there with over 60% of our county that is publicly owned, much of that federally publicly owned. And I have real property as well that backs up to some of that federal property. And frankly, there's no one's been back there for more than 30 years. And I used to hike there. You can't even get in anymore. So when it comes to federal management of the lands, I think that we have a long ways to go, and we do have a lot we could do that would benefit our county as far as timber.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have one more question, comment from Representative Freeman, and then we need to move to Lane County.
Great. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and I'll be brief. And I wanted to thank you for coming up today. I know coming and telling the story is difficult in a very difficult situation, and your ability to put a smile on your face and say, hey, we're trying, is really impressive. I represent a portion of Josephine County, the northern portion, that clearly has more trees than people. And when I look around and see that our federal partners choose not to manage their land and the devastating effects that has on the community, it's extremely frustrating. And I've heard it said, and I'll say it again, is that I believe we elect to be poor. We elect officials at all different levels of government that don't identify the problem and fix it. Those trees are there. There is a demand for them. It's a wonderful natural resource. Josephine County, along with Curry, Douglas Lane, are all very, very rich in natural resources, and we choose not to manage them. So thank you for being here. I know you're doing the very best. I hope there's something we can do to help.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your attention today.
All right, Representative Hicks.
Thank you, and just one final brief point. As was said, the levy last week failed by 500 or so votes out of 26,000 cast countywide, and my take on that is that in light of the rough and ready closure, those are 85 voters right there who could have afforded a tax increase before the federal government, federal policies took the job away from them. So that encapsulates the problem on a small scale to me.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for sharing your story and for coming to visit. It's a very impactful testimony, and we'll do what we can, certainly.
Thank you, Representative Hoyle.
All right, thanks. With that, we'll call up our next panel, Commissioner Sid Lykin and Commissioner Jay Bosevich, both from Lane County.
It only takes one of us to square the light bulb,
so. I thought that we could have two county commissioners coming up, but again, I
he's going.
Commissioner Bosevich, you're going to have to talk twice as fast.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, co-chairs Hoyle and Hannah, and members of the task force. Commissioner Jay Bosevich, Lane County. Before I get into my presentation, I just want to hit three key points that if you walk away with anything, I want to make sure you remember these things. First is Lane County is still in fiscal distress. Whether we pass the levy or not, we're still there. Two, the reason we passed this levy is because we aim small, we miss small, to quote Mel Gibson from The Patriot. Very targeted, very limited levy. Thank you. That was annoying. And third, we do need state help and federal help to resolve this permanently. We cannot do this through taxing our citizens alone. So if those three things you want to take away is we're still in fiscal distress. The reason we passed it was we went small and targeted, and we still need help from the state and federal government. So this is a familiar graph to most people, and I bring it up here because this is the task force on ONC counties, but this is specifically the revenue that's been coming in to Lane County, originally from ONC, BLM lands, and then through the SRS Act. The problem kind of gets obvious there, but what I want to point out is back when we were cutting timber before the spotted owl, we took in about $17 million into our general fund from ONC lands. In today's dollars, that would be approximately $32 million if you inflate it, and if you were starting to inflate that and add population growth, it'd be worth about $40 million. The levy we just passed would gross out, if you didn't take into account for compression and collection, about $15 million. So if you think back, what used to come into our general fund, and this is not including the U.S. Forest Service road fund monies or the school fund monies, just what came into our general fund is essentially twice the levy we just passed. And just to make the problem a little bit more obvious, this is our general fund and all fund budgets over the last 4 years. It does not include the levy in the 13-14 budget there. But you can see the levy will not bring our all funds back to the levels we were at 4 years ago. So I'm kind of talking about why the levy passed in Lane County and some of the history here. We did have a history of success prior to about 1996. 1998 on, things didn't do so well in Lane County. We kind of had an 0-4 record. But we started back in 2010 with a community task force, where it was a citizen-led initiative to go out and talk to everyone about what they wanted in a public safety system, what they thought was important. And it was good. It was a citizen-driven effort that started that conversation. So our success goes back almost 4 years of starting to educate citizens. We put together a committee in 2012, looked at various ways, and we ultimately waived trying to put something on the November ballot last year because we understood we couldn't pass something last year. You know, one of the things we went in with the city of Eugene and did some survey work, and the consultant for that survey basically said if you don't put it on the ballot with a unanimous board, it will not pass because people will look at the no votes from commissioners and say what don't I know here, and choose that as a reason to vote no. And we knew we didn't have a unanimous board at that time. So what kind of made the May election decision for us? What was helpful was some of our past failures were due to the thought that we were just going to get some renewal of federal money. You know, there's always that in the voter's mind. You know, if I vote to tax myself, is it, or the past times that we've said no, the feds have stepped in and re-upped secure rural schools or done an extension or whatever and saved us. You know, so it's kind of this, the feds have been some of our own worst enemy at times as far as when they come in with the funding. It was pretty clear that the electorate understood there was not going to be a federal rescue this time, that we had to do something on our own locally. And Senator Wyden released his principles that basically also called for some kind of local, skin in the game. We also re-engaged the same research firm that did the polling the summer before and redid the polling, which told us some very specific parameters around which we could approve a levy. And basically, And I think you've been handed out a copy of the actual levy language here. What our consultant told us was the people were very price sensitive. You know, we pulled 25 cents per thousand, 50 cents per thousand, $75. There was a definitive break between 50 cents and 75. 50 cents would pass, 75 wouldn't. You know, so one of the things is understanding what people can afford. And, you know, our county basically was telling us, our citizens were, we can afford 50 cents, you know, is what, and we ended up putting a 55 cent levy on because we wanted to add a little bit more, because one of the things we were told would also help us was having some youth services involved in the levy, because that pulled positively. One of the big things our polling also told us is people don't trust government. I mean, you all probably experienced that pretty well. You've run for office. There is a mistrust in government. Adding the auditing function to the levy and making that a requirement moved us 6 points favorable, which is huge when you start talking about polling numbers, something that moves people that far. And keeping it very targeted for a service that benefited all citizens of Lane County. We didn't go for any patrol services where there'd be that urban-rural divide between the citizens of Eugene and Springfield that pay for a municipal police force and don't use a rural patrol service. We went for jail beds that every city and every rural resident utilizes for felony offenders. And we went for youth services that none of the municipalities provide. It's a county service, countywide. So being very targeted and specific, and we looked at other services that were countywide, like prosecution. Those didn't poll well. As important as they were, we didn't include them in the levy because it was not something that got us to passing. And one of the things that's failed about past levies is we've tried to do everything with them. And when you put that Christmas tree levy together, basically what it does is it gives people something to vote against. There'll be some ornament on that Christmas tree they don't like, and that allows them to justify a no vote. So being very specific and targeted on countywide services, limiting the size of the levy, and including an auditing function are what got our citizens to yes, and taking almost 4 years to build the public relations around passing that levy. Even something as specific in the levy language as listing Sheriff Tom Turner, because our polling said he had the highest favorables of all of our elected officials, and we identified him with the campaign. The commissioners didn't do the campaigning for this levy because our polling wasn't as high as the sheriff. So everything about it was very strategic, very targeted. But the clear thing I want to leave people with is this did not resolve all of Lane County's fiscal problems. And it's going to bring in about, even though the levy language talks about $15 million, it's only going to bring us in about $13.6 million a year. Because by the time you take care of compression and collections, you lose several million. That's not very much money when you talk about a population of 354,000. It gets us to a level of jail beds where we're going to be able to hold Measure 11 offenders. We are not holding any property crimes folks for any length of time. You know, our DA's office, we managed to keep them from having cuts this year by using some one-time money, but they're still failing to prosecute 30% of our felony arrests because of resources, not because of lack of evidence or the fact that the person, you know, they think they can convict. It's because they don't have the staff to actually prosecute those felonies. So we got the yes, and I think it's a very positive thing. It's going to allow us to build some trust with our voters, I think that's was one of the most important things is, you know, we're going to do everything in our power to maintain the jail beds we promised and the youth services we promised and build that trust for the next election possibly. So just some quick lessons learned again. Willingness to pay is crucial. And I think part of what you're seeing is a difference where Lane County only has an 8% unemployment rate in the last report. Josephine and Curry are 10.8 and 11.1. Targeted services rather than the kitchen sink. One of the interesting things in our polling is people truly understood the federal forest issue. And that, you know, one of the questions we asked was about, you know, do people understand that more than 50% of Lane County is owned by the federal government? Yes. Do they understand that there's the harvest is and the money is stopped? And they really understood those issues. They don't really understand Measure 5, 47, and 50. You know, that is a very difficult thing for them to understand. A little bit of investment in auditing went a long way towards the yes vote. But really, it's a temporary solution to just a small piece of our public safety system. We spend 67% approximately of our general fund on public safety. The rest of that goes towards assessment, taxation, elections, and other functions that are critical. You've already heard some testimony relative to needing better support for assessment and taxation. We collect taxes for 82 other municipalities, school districts, and special districts besides Lane County. It's something your Department of Revenue is not ready to take over in any shape or form. We are currently running on the second year of special dispensation from DOR on retaining our CAFA grant because of the level of funding in our assessment taxation. We built this year's budget using left money that was allocated last year in the SRS extension that we held over. We basically had $4.5 million of one-time money in our general fund this year that won't be there next year. So the levies in a special revenue fund, it's set aside for specific purposes. We're still going to be dealing with DA assessment, elections, parole and probation, you know, and other services cuts next year with the levy passing. So just kind of a little final reminder of we didn't really solve the problem. This is the jail beds per 1,000 reported crimes. We were down to 10 jail beds per 1,000 when the U.S. average is 84 and across Oregon it's 54. After the levy, we're going to come back up to 18 jail beds per 1,000 crimes. So we are still well below the Oregon average for jail beds. We should have somewhere in the range of 600 to 1,000 jail beds in our county. We're going to have 255 local beds. So with that,
Commissioner, thank you, and I'm very grateful for your work, for the County Commission putting this forward, for the Sheriff's work, and for everyone that helped us get this levy passed. And again, I think it's a good lesson as to how people wanted us to go further, but we were very clear, and people were clear about what they wanted. I also think that it's fair to point out that per capita, Lane County has less jail beds than Josephine County per person. Yeah. So, Representative McLean.
Commissioner, how much did the county spend on polling?
The second set of polling we did was with the commissioner's contingency fund, and we spent $20,000 on that particular set of polling the second time. That was for polling 500 voters. We combined with the city of Eugene the first time, and I believe we spent somewhere close to the same. Is that correct, Alex?
Or? Yeah. About 12 or 13.
About 12 or 13 the first time, but we were piggybacked with the city of Springfield and the city of Eugene that were polling for their own measures at that time, the Springfield jail measure and ultimately the city of Eugene's city fee, household fee that didn't pass.
So if I could, you spent about, or the county spent about $32,000 total in polling?
That's correct.
Anyone else? Any other comments or? All right.
If I could make one final comment,
sure,
that I think I forgot to touch on. If you look at the very last line of our ballot measure language, it talks about the estimated tax that would be raised. It would be wonderful if you guys could amend the statute around that. What we have to list by law is the total tax raised if you take the levy amount times our total assessed value in the county. It takes into no account compression or collection rate. So what you end up with is two different numbers out there, is a number we have to report by statute that gets picked up in the press of the levy is going to raise 15 million plus, 15 to 16 million, and the actual money it's going to raise, which was between 13 and 13 and a half million. And trying to explain that to citizens is a, you know, as soon as you have to start explaining, they're not trusting your numbers. And then they start doing things like dividing the total amount they see on this line by the number of jail beds and coming out with some outrageous numbers of cost per jail bed. Yes, yeah, so it would be very helpful to be allowed to actually state what will actually be the income coming to the county rather than some artificial number that means nothing. And you know, just the compression is an important thing, because if we had gone for larger amounts, this small 55-cent levy caused compression in one of our rural fire districts, but it was a very small amount of compression, about 60,000. Every penny more would have been that much more compression, and we had started hitting other districts. So the higher amount of a levy we try and pass under the current tax laws, the more built-in opposition we generate to a levy. So, you know, if we tried to go for a $1.48 or a $1.99 levy, I guarantee we'd never be able to pass it, because there would be too many districts that would be financially hurt by the compression caused by that levy. So having the actual amounts here rather than not including compression would be helpful.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And Commissioner Lykin, thank you very much for coming down to speak with us, up to speak with us. With that, we've got Commissioner David Brock Smith, the chair of the Curry County Commission, to talk about what's going on in Curry County. Commissioner Smith, thank you for joining us. And with that, we'd just like to get an update on financial health of your county post public safety ballot measure. Commissioner Smith?
Some technical issues today. Obviously, the co-chair is not nice enough to.
We do have written testimony submitted by Commissioner Susan Brown from Curry County. That is on OLIS, so people can read that.
Hello, Commissioner Smith?
Yes.
Good morning, Commissioner Smith. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'd like to get an update on Curry County and sort of your status post public safety ballot measure. And again, we very much thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Madam Chair and fellow committee members. And thank you for your work on what I believe is the real solution to the fiscal problems within our counties, and that's the increasing of timber harvest. So also, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning regarding this important piece of legislation that could be a lifeline to Curry County and the other counties facing this public safety crisis.
Thank you.
Curry County commissioners of the past, just a little history, had the forethought decades ago and began to move departments from the county to standalone districts such as our hospital, libraries, and ports. More recently, Curry County has moved our local hospice and our public and mental health departments to standalone nonprofits so that these departments may stay viable, continue to deliver services to our citizens while limiting the liability to the citizens of Curry County. Curry County will finish our budget on June 11th, and in this budget, we have four sheriff's deputies continue to operate our jail with the Sheriff Bishop's efficiencies of our 911 communication dispatchers also watching the monitors, viewing our inmates, and unlocking the electronic locks for the corrections officers in the jail. These three departments mentioned above staffed at their current inadequate rates exceed budgetarily our $2.1 million annual new discretionary revenue. This leaves no revenue to fund any other departments within the county. Budgetarily, we literally are using our unemployment PERS and PERS reserves and our working capital to make it through at the current inadequate service levels until July of 2014. And I feel obligated to do so to keep our citizens as safe as I can with the resources I have available. Curry County has 22,364 residents. We collect $22 million in taxes, although we receive only $1.4 million of that revenue to fund county services. 30% of our property owners do not reside within our county. 18% of our residents meet the poverty level of an annual income of less than $17,000. Our current unemployment rate is 10.8%. Our median age is 54 years young. Curry County has 3,716 veterans, the highest percentage per capita of any county in the state. Our levy was built at a split rate of $1.97 a thousand for the unincorporated residents and $1.84 a thousand for our residents that live within our three incorporated cities. Measure 8-71 would have generated $4.5 million and allowed all of the public safety departments to be covered by the revenue generated. The split rates were based on the services used within individual departments by the incorporated and unincorporated areas of Curry County. This formula was specifically used so that we may keep public safety services to our citizens, creating the fiscal bridge to build the permanent law enforcement districts that we all desire. This levy failed by 446 yes votes. The board will be looking at a possible funding solution for a special election on the September ballot. And those discussions will begin later this week. As an extension of the state, Curry County appreciates the support from the legislatures here at Salem, and we stand ready to work with you for our citizens.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Is there are there any questions from the panel or comments? Well, we'll keep you posted as to what we're doing, and we'll continue to work with and express to our federal delegation how important it is that we have sustainable harvest on our federal timberlands. And again, thank you so much for your work, I know, in very, very difficult circumstances.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. With that, I'll close the informational meeting on the update on the financial health of Curry Lane and Josephine counties. Are there any closing remarks by the committee members? Okay, with that, I'll close the meeting of the House Task Force on